You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
From an array of highly secure, top secret locations across South Texas, this is the Spurs Insider, the podcast that for some reason is much better on the road than at home. I am your host, Mike Finger, joined as always by Express News sports editor Nick Talbot, beat writer Tom Ringo Orsborn, and the polarizing Jeff McDonald. We are gathering after the conclusion of the longest homestand in San Antonio Spurs history. The local Cagers played 9 games in a row in the friendly confines of the AT&T Center and won a grand total of 2. What the heck happened, guys?
They need a rodeo trip about now, I think.
I mean, it would be an improvement as on what we just saw, right? I know we're going to get into a lot of the details of why this didn't work out, but is there kind of a Cliff's Notes version of what's to blame, how disheartening this might be for what's happening next, and kind of where they go from here?
Well, mostly on this 9-game homestand, mostly they didn't play much defense, but sometimes they did. And on those nights, they didn't play any offense. So I think and then some nights they didn't do either one, and those were the nights that were really bad. But in 4 of the last 5 games, they gave up more than 125 points. 2 of those were overtime games, but still. But they also lost games on this homestand by giving up 197 points. So it was a little bit of everything. Just
197?
100 in one game and 97 in another.
Oh.
So they've also lost games by being just unable to score. So it was just sort of a meltdown on on both ends of the floor, sometimes at the same time, sometimes one or the other. But it was I kind of looked at it as sort of like whack-a-mole, where they'd give up a bunch of points and then get that figured out, but then not be able to score, and they get that figured out, but then not be able to defend anymore. And the end result is 2-7 and woof, just woof. That's all I can say.
Pop says they're fried. Yeah, Pop says we look like we're fried. We just look tired.
I'm gonna be the viewers here, and I know they're not viewers; they're listeners. But they're screaming at their device right now. That's an excuse, Tom. Yeah. Stop making excuses. Making excuses, Pop. Come on, tell us the truth. Why do they really stink?
I thought it was valid, and then. Saw a stat last night about Memphis, which has the same brutal schedule in terms of number of games in the time period remaining. And since the All-Star break, they're 8-7, I believe. Spurs are like 6-10. Now, I don't know. You got to look at the makeup of the team, injuries and all that. But yeah, that would bolster the listeners, not viewers, that are screaming right now.
I love to point out the polarizing Jeff McDonald's shortcomings more than just about anybody does. I mean, it's fun. It's a fun thing to do. But one thing I should say is when people get upset with him and with Tom and with basically everyone on this podcast for making excuses about the team that we cover, I just want to point out that kind of Jeff's job is to explain things, is to offer explanations. And, you know, I'm sure Nick Talbot wouldn't be too excited if Jeff turned in his game story and just said, you know, they stink. They're terrible. That's it. End of story. What his job is to offer theories, rationale, explanations for why they lost 7 of 9 games, for why things aren't coming together. And it's not about, oh, because you offer an explanation, you're making an excuse for this team. It might come off that way to some people. But I think what you're doing is you're saying, look, they just played back-to-back overtime games. They're playing tied with Memphis, the toughest schedule of the second half. All these things can contribute to why this team might not look so great right now. Right? I mean, is that fair?
Yes, that's fair. And I think I've made the point, too, that it's not the only thing. The schedule and fatigue isn't the only thing. All of these things are true. They're kind of an average basketball team that is not playing its best basketball of the year and is also being crushed by the schedule. Like, it's all those things together. Yes. If they were a better team, the schedule wouldn't affect them as much. If they had an easier schedule, if they had some time off, they might win some of these games. So I think it's just a combination of all that stuff. If you're asking me why were they playing so good, you know, a month ago and now they're playing terrible? Well, one pretty obvious theory is that they are playing every other night or every night, and they've had some overtime games lately, and it's just, and they've got guys out, and it's just all conspiring to catch up with them. And I think the Memphis comparison is valid, but, you know, if you, it's like someone told me yesterday, well, Memphis has won 6 out of its last 10. Well, you can also pick a 10-game spot since the All-Star game, since the All-Star break, where the Spurs had won 6 of their last 10. And I'm not going to be shocked at some point in the season, in the season to come, given what Memphis is also going to, I'm not going to be shocked if they have a stretch where they only win, you know, 2 out of 9 games. I'm not going to be shocked at that. I would also say that if the Spurs had Ja Morant, they would have won 2 more games on this homestead. I think I feel pretty good about that too. You can compare and contrast all you want, but the schedule is a thing. It is a thing. And it's fair to say that we all sat here on this podcast when that schedule was announced and went, and the other people across the NBA did too. Other analysts, other people that are smarter than us.
How could anybody be smarter than us?
Well, it's not that hard. Looked at that schedule and said, holy crap, this could be a problem. And so it shouldn't be a surprise that, holy crap, it is a problem.
I do also think that even if we got rid of the schedule factor, even if we got rid of the injury factor, even if we got rid of the overtime accumulation factor, an argument could be made that for the first half of the season, the Spurs were kind of playing over their head and they were due to come down anyway. And so this could just be, as our old friend Mono would say often over the years, a regression to the mean. And that even if they were playing a normal schedule, even if they had everybody, they weren't going to win at the same clip they did over the first part of the season. The first half of the season was the Spurs being one of the pleasant surprises in the league. And, you know, we knew heading into the year that they probably were going to be a fringe playoff team, a fringe 500 team. And that's kind of the water is finding its own level again. Tom, is there, speaking of water, is there a half full view of this?
Well, you know, I agree with Pop too. The inconsistency in the lineup has been a factor, you know, guys in and out. And Lonnie Walker has been the common denominator during this homestand. He's been out pretty much the entire time, except for the first game. You lose some scoring with him. You lose some energy with him. Deang went out. Not that that's the end all be all, but it's just hard when you're constantly shuffling things and you're missing a key guy. You know, that factors into it. Pop said that Lonnie will be back on this road trip. Should be, hopefully, will be. Fingers crossed. So that should give him a little bit of a boost. And Deang is back. I think they'll you know, get back on the right path, get their minds right, and get back on the right path.
That's how long this past week has been. When we met in the secure locations a week ago, we were talking about how Jimmy Bonham had ridden off and grabbed some replacements, and one of them was Gorgie Jing. And then since then, like immediately he gets his shoulder beaten, and it's his first few minutes as a Spur and is out for several games, and now is back. But that was, I mean, that was the reinforcement, and he didn't last one trip onto the floor, basically. Has Nick done any studying of Texas history over the past week, by the way? I know we've been overwhelming him lately.
No, between the Valero Open, the national championship game, the 9-game homestand, I have not been able to brush up on my Texas history, unfortunately.
Now,
if you want to talk comic books or Star Wars or NBA basketball, I am well averse on those things, but the Alamo, I am still there in the void.
How would Luke Skywalker have done at the Alamo?
If they had Luke Skywalker at the Alamo, they would have fared much better.
I think we need to do like 20 minutes on the Battle of Goliad.
They did not have any Force ghosts to help them either, which, you know, well, maybe they did have some Force ghosts, and maybe that's why they lasted so long. There's a new theory.
Wow.
Do you want to play Does Jeff Know right now? Because the answer is no.
Jeff knows nothing about Star Wars. It's very disappointing. Very disappointing.
Oh, I saw the movie with Mark Hamill. I believe that's his name, Mark Hamill, and the Indiana Jones fella. Like, I saw those movies as a kid.
Here we go. Does Jeff know who Grogu is?
Jeff does not know who that person is. Is it some sort of hobbit?
That is Baby Yoda. That is Baby Yoda.
Oh, okay. Yoda's the little green fella.
That's the real name of Baby Yoda. There we go. Does Jeff know for the week did not go very well? It's Star Wars knowledge is not good.
So that's his real name, but like when he meets girls, he just calls himself Baby Yoda, because it's just
absolutely because he's adorable. So Baby Yoda works much better.
Okay, so like in a bar pickup situation, he's Baby Yoda.
Way back when we were all at the office and we had, you know, when life was normal, we often got books. You know, we get books sent to us left and right.
Right.
For review. And I picked one off our fine Metro reporter, Scott Huddleston, who has covered the Alamo and the efforts to revamp it, remake it. There's a book called Exodus from the Alamo, The Anatomy of the Last Stand Myth. And for a guy who grew up in San Antonio and, you know, as a kid was mesmerized by the Alamo, that was a real eye-opener. I highly recommend that book.
What myths were busted by this?
Well, basically, there was no last stand. And
what?
I don't like these attempts to rewrite history.
Sounds like cancel culture. They're canceling Davy Crockett.
We all joke about, was there a back door at the Alamo? Well, there was. And it was wide open. And they fled out of it. In mass during the battle, and it was a no-brainer, really. I mean, why stay? And they were trying to get on the road to Gonzales, and which goes through the road still exists here in San Antonio. And they were cut down by the Mexican cavalry.
Wow.
And, you know, it's something that's not – this author did a great job of explaining all of that, there was no last stand. There was no Davy Crockett swinging the musket and trying to blow the place up and all that. So
everything.
It does, Mike.
Yeah, but that documentary I saw with John Wayne says different.
Right. Yeah. That's a hell of a movie, just a hell of an entertaining movie, not factual, but it's entertaining.
Yeah. So with that being said, is there a back door to the AT&T Center? And should this team continue to fight this out and make a last stand, or is it time to just kind of think about lotteries and whatnot?
Rudy and DeMar indicated last night they're going to go down swinging. No exodus from the AT&T Center.
Was there a line in the sand?
Well, Pop is too busy with politics right now to draw that line in the sand. He's very distracted.
Oh, no.
He's very distracted.
Oh, goodness.
And I say that with tongue firmly planted in cheek, of course.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Oh no. I'm getting so many phone calls on that one.
Oh, we just lost a viewer.
We're going to skip across that and look at the what is coming up, the likelihood that the Spurs can turn this around. And it should be said that as poorly as they have played on this homestand, it's not like everybody around them is going all gangbusters. The Golden State Warriors also have lost 7 of their last 10. And right now, the Spurs still, after the worst stretch of the year, one of their worst stretches in recent memory, especially at home, a 2.5 game lead on the 11th place New Orleans Pelicans. Now, the Pelicans look like they might be playing a little better than the Spurs these days. But if this has been a blip on the radar screen, and I know there was no radar at the Alamo, but if this has just been a blip and the Spurs get past this, it seems like they could be still in that running for the play-in tournament at the end of the year.
I mean, they could be in the running, but have you looked at their schedule?
It's the first time hearing of a tough schedule.
Like this, like even DeMar said in the middle of this homestand, DeMar says, we haven't even got to the tough part yet, and they're 2-7. Like, there's no place where they're going to. Number one, it's not just that they're playing a lot of games in a short amount of time with no rest. From here on out, a lot of games in a short amount of time with no rest against the best teams in the league. There's not really a stretch where they're even getting. There's one maybe stretch at the end of this month where they're getting some sub 500 team. But three against Phoenix. It's two against Utah. It's they go from here from this terrible homestand. They go to Denver for two. You know, there's just not they've got Philadelphia still to come. They've got another game against Milwaukee. They've got the in terms of strength of schedule, they have the second toughest schedule remaining. So it's not, they're going to have to beat, in order to hold on to 10th, I think they're going to have to beat some really good teams. And can they do it? I guess, but not the way they've been playing. Getting healthy will help, I suppose.
Yeah.
I posit a theory that might be encouraging for those who are hoping for a turnaround?
Always making excuses. Go for it.
I would say that everything that you just mentioned is absolutely correct, and there is a potential for things to get much worse before they get better. But I would also posit that part of the problem over the past couple of weeks is not just the physical fatigue, which absolutely is a factor, but the mental part of leading these games over. Some of these games, we haven't mentioned the particulars of how they lost these games, but in many of them, they built leads, blew them, lost in overtime, had chances to win in regulation. And I think all of us, whether we're the viewers of this podcast, I know they're not viewers, they're listeners, or the hosts of this podcast, when you get tired and things start to go wrong, you expect more things to go wrong. And sometimes it's not that you need a good night's sleep or to take several days off or a vacation, but for just one thing to go right. And maybe if one thing goes right, that can lift this mental burden that you have on you, this sense of this weariness. And maybe if they go on the road and beat somebody they're not supposed to beat, know they're not going to have that rest, know they're not going to have 2 days off in a row, basically literally for the rest of the season, they're not going to have 2 days off. But maybe just that mental burden gets eased a little bit and things start to go well.
So Wednesday's game is the game then at Denver.
Wow.
Denver looks good.
I'm not putting all of it on one game. I'm just saying any one of these games coming up could be the start of something. And I think Jeff's doom and gloom is more likely. I'm not trying to say that this definitely is going to happen. I'm just offering a theory as to how things could sort of turn around. Go ahead.
You want to hear a phrase never uttered before in NBA history? Boy, we're tired and worn out and mentally fatigued. We can't wait to get to Denver to play two games.
Denver, who has not lost with Aaron Gordon yet.
Maybe Lonnie Walker is the Luke Skywalker / reinforcements from Goliad. or Gonzalez. You know, maybe that'll do it.
Man,
you know,
we're putting a lot on Lonnie Walker, who is, you know, is an okay player.
I know. No, you're right.
It's a counterintuitive way to look at things, but this team has sort of been counterintuitive all year. They've been better, way better on the road than they have been at home. They've looked better against good teams than bad teams. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Some of their more impressive games of the year have come against teams that are going to be in the running for the NBA title. And again, the way out that I just described is low percentage. Like, it's probably not going to happen. But if there is a way for this team just not to completely fall apart and to plummet down the standings at the end, I think that that's one way out. You just get a shot of energy, a shot of optimism, and build on that from there. But it's again, that's the low percentage play.
I'm not saying they're going to go winless the rest of the way or something, but it's just hard to envision them putting together some sort of, you know, great stretch of wins that makes you feel good about where you are. I mean, they could certainly hold on and get into a play-in situation, but it's I don't think it's going to be very pretty. I really don't.
I agree with you, but I also I'll go be so bold as to say this. I bet. Let's see. They played 48 games. There's still 24 to go. During some stretch in there, they'll win 4 out of 5. How about that? And maybe there'll be stretches where they lose 7 in a row. But I think there's still one more stretch in there where they kind of feel their oats and play well for a stretch. And the key will be to have more than one of those stretches or to extend it a little bit. Anyway, do you think that's inconceivable that they could have a 4 out of 5, you know, 5 out of 7 stretch in them, even as tough as the schedule is?
I mean, anything can happen in the world. You know, lots of things could happen. So inconceivable, I guess not.
I guess I'm looking at it on paper. On paper, the answer is no, looking at it.
Yeah, there's a stretch at the end of the month where they play Detroit, Washington, and New Orleans. I think those would be 3 winnable games. But then again, you just lost to Cleveland. I think that's the big, you know, loss in all of this, especially when it's 24 points. Is, you know, you lost to Cleveland, and that just doesn't look good. The overtime losses, the Hawks are playing pretty well. The Pacers aren't a bad team. They're overtime losses, and then you're tired. But man, Cleveland just. That just stings because they're not very good.
Again, analyzing these types of things is what we're supposed to do. But so much about what this team has done already is kind of nonsensical. If you look, there was a terrible loss to Utah early in the year when it looked like, I mean, really early, when things were totally going to fall apart and this was going to be a disastrous season. And they turn around and beat the Clippers and the Lakers back to back in Los Angeles. Like, nobody saw that as their chance to get back in the flow. So I think there's going to be little stretches that thoroughly surprise everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm naive.
Yeah. I kind of picture you of the,
maybe if they get a win over them.
I kind of picture you as the dog in that meme with the house on fire behind him saying, "This is fine."
Well, it kind of is. This is not a team that we all expected to compete for a title, or even, I don't know if any of us predicted that they would make the actual playoffs this year. So it's not like everything is falling apart. The house is on fire, and I'm sitting here saying that the house is not on fire. I would argue that any playoff games they play in this year, if they do play in games, would be a pleasant surprise. This year was not supposed to be about that. And if they end up plummeting to 12th place and get a lottery pick, like, that's kind of part of the plan, right? I don't know. I just don't think that declaring this a disaster or that all is lost
not for nothing. But if you want to go back through the archives of this podcast, Before we even played a game this year, I think you got some idiot, probably you, asked me what I thought, you know, of the team this year or how they. I thought they could be the worst team in the Western Conference, and I was kind of being hyperbolic, but I did not have super high hopes for this team making a playoff run. So when they were sitting there in sixth, nigh 2 weeks ago, I thought that was really impressive. So you are correct in that any extra games they play this year are gravy. I believe the way it works is if you make the play-in but don't make the playoffs, you are in the lottery, yeah?
Correct.
So maybe that's the best case scenario. You get the extra game, the extra experience, but you also get the lottery pick.
Sure. And as you pointed out, that play-in is not a guarantee. And actually might not even be considered likely now. Now I also should acknowledge that there were moments on this podcast, 4 weeks ago, before all of this sort of fell apart, where it was stated on here that it looked really likely that the top 10 spot is going to happen. And that doesn't look that way anymore. So there has been a sense of disappointment in that things aren't going like they look like they were going when the Spurs were playing well. But we said to start out, this is kind of a fringe team. There's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, and this is one of those down moments. We'll see if things turn around.
All right. You want to talk about all the rotation tweaks Pop should make to fix this? Do we have that much time left?
This gets so confusing because in the span of a single night, you can hear that this team is terrible. Why are they even trying to win anyway? You know, tank for the best possible pick you can get, which, by the way, the NBA's rule changes kind of discourage tanking now anyway. That's a bad approach. But then also, oh, they should make these changes to the rotation so they could win these games. And then also, like, some people want to play more of the young guys to get them playing time for the future. And then some guys are all about, well, we need to be trying to beat Cleveland. All of these theories kind of butt heads with each other. And I'm not sure there's a consistency to the complaining, if that makes any sense.
Well, I think people think playing the young guys will also result in beating Cleveland. But also my question is, what young guys? At this point, are you just talking about Luka? Because all the other young guys are in the rotation and playing. Or are we all in on we need to be playing Quindary, Weatherspoon, and Trey Jones right now? Is that what they're saying?
Trey Jones.
That's what I don't understand.
I try not to obsess too much about all of those suggestions because there's just – it. I don't know. Like you – is – this is me stuttering here. Is more Luka? What does more Luka get you? Like Luka, I think, is playing an adequate number of minutes. Like he's getting time. He's not just withering away on the bench.
Well, Pop said he was going to play Luka after that one game, and then like didn't for three or four, and then he started him against Cleveland because DeJounte Murray was out. But I'm not sure if he's going to. I mean, I'm you know.
If so this is my point.
What does playing Luka get you? It gets you more time for Luka. It gets Luka some experience. That's what it gets you in the story. Uh-huh. And is that a good thing, I guess? I don't know. I'm not advocating for that. I'm just asking a question.
This goes back to the discussions we've had for years about name your young guy.
And next year it'll be someone else.
And next year it'll be somebody else. You know, just playing time doesn't magically make you better. And I know this repeats what we've said on here for years, but the Spurs develop young players as well as any franchise in the league. I don't think that's hyperbole to say. And part of it is guys kind of have to earn their playing time and put in the work outside of games. And you know, that's worked for everybody from DeJounte Murray to Derek White to, you know, Keldon Johnson. All of them have done well through this. Lonnie Walker. And to say, oh, you just throw Luka out there and more minutes equals better Luka, that doesn't necessarily work. And I think last night, the Cleveland game was kind of exhibit A there. Luka got his playing time. You still lost to one of the worst teams in the league, and I'm not sure that playing time for Luka is going to mean that he's going to be an all-star next year. I don't know. I just don't. What annoys me is just, oh, Pop obviously should do this. Oh, the Spurs obviously should do this, and factor X, Y, Z will be better. Like, there's not any, and this, it's the same reason that people get upset with you for quote unquote making excuses. You're just, there seems to be an explanation or rationale for every move they make. And it's okay to disagree with them, but I mean, I'm just not eager to say the brain trust here is idiots and they're totally screwing this up. And why can't they see they should be doing X, Y, or Z? The Spurs are kind of who they are now, right?
Hey, that was some pretty good analysis, which is surprising from you. Could you tell our viewers where they could get more such analysis?
What I'm enjoying about these recent podcasts is that my fellow podcasters are orchestrating some great segues into my promotional stuff. I used to have to do this on my own. And now both Ringo and the polarizing Jeff McDonald have given me great segues into the great deals at expressnews.com, where the listeners of this podcast can subscribe for very reasonable amounts of money. Hardly any money at all when you consider everything they get out of it. I mean, not just Spurs coverage, but Nick Talbot's staff covers all of the sporting scene here in South Texas. You have the coverage of the city, of politics, of just everything going on in our region. It's a great deal. And also at expressnews.com, you can sign up for the Spurs Nation newsletter that will send all of Tom and Jeff's stuff to your inbox every day. And I thank Jeff for pointing that out.
You're getting a little help from your friends, Mike.
That's true. Ringo.
Thank you. Thank you, Ringo.
So it was a good segue.
Also,
you
like
the segue? You like the segue?
It was very good.
Was it you mean a segue like those little scooters that people used to ride around on?
Segue without when you used the word segue 30 seconds ago, I would have bet my entire life savings that you were going to make a scooter joke.
It's my favorite.
Like, there was no doubt in my mind.
It reminds me of my favorite Boris Diaw story. Well, not favorite. It's probably not even top 10, actually, because that guy was amazing. But when he played in Charlotte, he lived like a block from the arena and still rode a scooter, a Segway to work and back. That's one of my favorite Boris factoids.
When I covered the San Antonio Saints in the Alamo Dome, many years ago, Tom Orsborn was there. The Aaron Brooks, the players there, rode Segways from the parking lot to the locker room. It was quite a thing.
Well, that was a good segue.
Anyway, the other promotional stuff is go and rate this podcast and write reviews, enjoying those. Send us more suggestions for Does Jeff Know? Hopefully not with Star Wars, because he does not know it. And we are wrapping up here, so we're going to end on a high note. Things might not fall apart for your local Cagers. They might not be the worst team in the league over the last few months. There's a chance that things might go badly. There's a chance that things might go well. You never know. It's unpredictable, just like life. So because life is unpredictable, the thing you need to do as viewers and as listeners is to take care of each other and keep it real.